Let's talk about the glass ceiling that some people think is in place for working class people. Research shows that someone from a working class background in a professional job like law or accountancy is typically paid £7,000 less than a colleague who's had a more privileged upbringing. The biggest pay gap is in finance, where a working class professional could earn £13,700 less than someone from a well-off background. The discrepancy in medicine could be more than £10,000. What is going on? Well, the recruitment specialist Tina McKenzie with us this morning. Tina, morning to you. What do you think's going on?
Morning, Stephen. Well, I think a few things, actually. The statistics tell us that those that went to an independent private school or Oxbridge educated have a much more opportunity to get into a senior job. So 70% of senior judges all were at independent schools, more than 50% of diplomats, and the list goes on. It's not just finance and accounting and law. So we know that we're in an elitist society, especially in the United Kingdom. And only 7%, you know, if you look at it and you compare, only 7% of people actually go to and have independent school educations, private school educations, yet they're way overrepresented in those particular areas. So we're living in an elitist society.
And so you're saying that as soon as you, the pivotal point is the school you go to.
Absolutely.
Rather than it being your background, working class, middle class, upper class, you're saying it's the school.
Well, the school is representative of your background. So anyone, usually the majority of people going to independent schools and the majority of Oxbridge educated people are coming from the middle class to upper class backgrounds. We know that. So it's absolutely associated with your background. And that's twofold. You know, that can be that those people are, you might argue that they're getting maybe a better education, but I think it also comes down a lot to the networks. You know, it's who you know, rather in some cases than what you know.
And how do you do anything about that?
Well, I think it's for people like yourself and maybe people like me, working class people that have come up through the ranks. I think it's our responsibility to challenge, break down those doors. I mean, I actually sometimes think the class ceiling is even tougher to break down than the glass ceiling for women. You know, so I think it's up to the people that actually do come up through the ranks and make it to ensure that we have a system where it's fair and equitable for people coming up and to help those people from working class backgrounds.
How though?
The system. Well, I think it's advising and helping people and ensuring that they are networked, but also confident. A lot of people that are maybe in a room with other people that are from well-off backgrounds and have a lot of support functions, you know, they sometimes don't feel as confident. So it's ensuring that they realise they're as good as anybody else in the room, irrespective of their accent, you know?
Yeah, you see, I find that territory really, really interesting. There's someone actually this week, let me keep it as broad as that. There was someone this week, well, it was a young lady that was coming on Top Table last night, right? And she had a working class background. And she said to me before the show, she said, I'm just a bit worried about, you know, people commenting on my accent. Mm-hmm. And I looked at her and I was, you know, she was brilliant and charismatic and glowing. And I just said to her, never say that again. You know, be proud of your background and be proud of where you come from. And I just wonder how many young people, or indeed older people still in the job market, have that in them, that they sometimes feel slightly inferior because they don't have a posh accent.
Yeah, and I think even, especially in Northern Ireland, actually, one of the things when you meet people in business, they'll say things like, for example, where are you from? And I know a lot of people that don't actually want to. I know you're from the Shankill. I know I'm from Andytown, you know, council housing, brought up working class. A lot of people don't actually want to say where they're from. And then you go to the other question.
I'm from about 2 miles above the Shankill before somebody.
Well, are you a wee bit more upmarket, are you?
Well, I'm just saying I'm a Westway man, Ballygamorton
yes,
Road man.
There you go. And, you know, a lot of people don't even want to say where they're from. And then you've got the question of which school did you go to? Now, I went to a secondary in West Belfast called St. Genevieve's. You know, out there in the business world, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of people that went to Inst, if you look across the civil service in Northern Ireland and compare the amount of people that went to INS that are in senior perm sec jobs and that are in positions
of power. That's because it's such a great school.
It is a good school, but actually, it's too overrep. It was. I think things are changing. It was too overrepresented, and that's not because all the talent was evinced. It's a back to that networking thing. People like to deal with people they know that they trust, and I think that that we have to ensure. And we're lucky in Northern Ireland that we have fair employment because our processes are more robust than you get in GB. Because we have had the fair employment legislation in for a long time, but it happens all over the world. But more so, I'd say in the UK, because if you go to the States or you go to Australia, it's more about your talent than not necessarily kind of that elitist view of, which university, which Oxford University we educated at.
I'd be really interested in some of you calling us this morning. If you're listening to this, do you think there is a class ceiling? Do you think there is, in terms of getting a job, and even beyond that, do you think there is a snobbery in Northern Ireland which does look down on working class people? You see, I'm not sure. I just don't know. I genuinely don't know if there is or not. Let's bring Frank Shivers, the businessman, into this. Bran Peelan, the journalist. Morning to you, Frank.
Morning, Stephen.
Morning. Morning, Brian. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning, good morning. Frank, do you think there's a snobbery in Northern Ireland against working class people? You think of our political system, there are quite a few confident, articulate working class people in our political system. You think of the likes of, Sammy Wilson. There's a confident, articulate man. Not a big fan of mine, but he's confident and articulate. There's lots of the Sinn Féin representatives from a working class background, and so it goes on. You look through all the political parties.
I think it's human nature, Stephen, that we like to socialise and we like to be around people that we can identify and that we feel we sort of feel an affinity to, and that generally is the people that you sort of grew up with and the back that has a similar background to you. What I would say is that a working class from my family's from the bottom of the shank. I'm very proud of it. It's all about you as an individual pushing yourself forward as best you can. And I know tons and tons and loads of working class men and women in Northern Ireland who are pushing on, and their social class does not hold them back one iota. And never will.
And so are you saying it's their fault then, if there is a ceiling? Are you saying you can burst through the ceiling?
Do you know what? I do. I mean, it's there. Don't get me wrong. It's there. But it's because it's of human nature. You go into a social club in the Falls or on the Shankill, and everybody's of a similar type social background. They're all, they relate to each other. You go to a golf club on Malone. It'll be a similar type background. People tend to flock where they're comfortable with, where their social background is. And what I would say as a working class business person, it's certainly changing, because I think people now from the working class background won't accept that as easily as they did possibly a number of decades ago. And that's a good thing.
Do you agree, Brian?
No. It's definitely not human nature. That's preposterous. But I mean, no, it's not human nature. The actual thing that got to me is that I didn't need another survey to tell me that this exists. Yes, there is individuals, and you're always told that. Yeah, but look at so-and-so. So-and-so's done this. So-and-so's done well. And then that's the example that's held up to everyone else. You can be like that. But the thousands who aren't like that, then it's kind of their fault, because they're not like that. They haven't done that. They haven't made those breakthroughs. So what we have to talk about is, why is that the case? And why has it not changed dramatically?
But do you think there is a ceiling for working class people, a different ceiling?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Well, it's where you're born, I mean, it's kind of when you're young, when you're born, I live in a working class area, and then you move into society, and then you start to meet people from other class, middle class, and sometimes you're, unfortunate enough, you meet people from upper class, and you see the values that they have and the values that they espouse, and obviously, they will argue them, they will articulate them, that I kind of sense that sort of voice is pervasive in the media, etc. So those ideas take hold, that this is human nature,
see,
that you can break through this ceiling.
I don't know about you, Tina, sorry, Brian, but I don't know whether I should admit this, but let's just do it. I kind of laugh at some of the posh upper-class people that are caught in this they're caught in this little world where they actually, you can see them, you know, and you'll know exactly the type of people I'm talking about here. And they're walking around in their posh little voice and they're kind of looking down on you, or they're, you know, and I just laugh at these people because it's the same type of people will then name drop about who they've been out with, and they've been to dinner parties, and they've been up with the, you know, whatever. And so it goes on. And it's a fake little pathetic clique.
Well, I wouldn't, to be honest, I wouldn't go that far, Stephen.
Come on, these people that don't want to mix with people outside their social class. That is pathetic.
Well, I agree with that, but and they're missing out hugely. But actually, you know, I've had the experience of, I now have some friends like that, and I look and I think, you know, they're missing out in the flavour of life if they're only surrounded by the same types of people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to be surrounded by lots of different people is a good thing, and we shouldn't judge everybody in the one social club or everybody in the one class as all being the same types of people. But what I will say is this: there are subtle signals, especially in business, there are subtle signals which give people these, I guess, subtle signs of what you know and what you don't know. So, for example, when I was being trained up, actually with a Dutch company in Amsterdam, they actually went as far as telling us how to dress. And so to the men, they said, if your tie does not touch your belt or just above your belt, then that is really bad. If your shoes are thicker on the bottom than X amount of centimetres, that was really bad as well. You know,
it was, and
those subtle things, you're like, really? Does it make that much of a difference? But it gives the game away that you don't know how to dress properly in corporate life.
Listen, Tina, thank you. Frank and Brian, thank you very much. Stephen's in Antrim. Good morning, Stephen.
Hi, good morning. Your piece before the news.
Yes.
Right. And here you are talking about being in the closet. I hope you don't take that as being some sort of sign that you're not middle class enough, not well educated enough to deserve a proper studio. But it was an interesting debate because I picked up from both you and Tina, your contributor, a number of disfluencies.
Yes.
But that's not the reason for my call. There's a class that you didn't talk about, and those are the members of the champion socialist class, those who come from independent or privately educated backgrounds, who are multimillionaires, but yet pretend to be working class, to be socialist.
What are you talking about, Stephen?
Oh, I could think of quite a number of them, particularly in British politics, who pretend that they came from the working class, and through merit and ability and attainment that they reach the lofty levels, and it's possible for anyone to do that. But in fact, it's their private education. See, people who are against, for instance, grammar schools and yet were privately educated themselves.
Who are you talking about?
Let me think. I could take Melissa Benn for a start.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I could take Polly Toynbee. You know, people that you would know from your Five Live experience.
Yes.
And these are people who pretend that they're one of us.
But they don't pretend, do they?
Well, they do.
They don't pretend at all.
When do you ever hear Polly Toynbee?
I forget to say Polly Toynbee. We're not talking about Polly Toynbee this morning.
Why not?
When she's not on the programme to defend herself.
Oh, well, bring her on, Stephen.
I believe you've got a comment about me. I am here to defend myself.
Yes. Well, I think you distance yourself when it was Tina raised the point of you being from the Shankill.
Yes.
You see, you distance yourself in terms of your Ballymartin location.
Wise up.
What?
I'll say it again, just in case you didn't hear it. Wise up.
Okay. Are you from the Shankill, Stephen?
I didn't distance myself from the Shankill.
Are you from the Shankill, Stephen?
No, I wasn't born on the Shankill Road.
All right.
Is the point I'm making?
Man.
No,
good.
I was born in Westway Gardens on the Ballygamartin Road.
Yes, I know where you're
Well,
born.
If you know that I was doing it, then don't try to be funny by saying I distanced myself from the people of the Shankill. I didn't.
Yeah.
There was no underlying little slight from me that you're trying to create. I was simply saying I was born a few miles above the Shankill Road on the Ballygamartin Road. So we don't need to go down this little facetious route with me when I wasn't making any distancing comment at all. And you know it, Stephen. Okay. And you know it.
And when
so let's just nail that one before we go on.
Okay. Well, you know, you think it's nailed. Let's talk about Inst.
Yes.
When you were at Inst.
Yes.
Did you pass an 11 plus to get into Inst?
Well, what do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah.
What what's does the it reason? Matter? I'm asking you the question.
And what's the reason for your question, Stephen?
Because I think it's important that people hear your story.
Oh, yes. And why would it be important either way? And then I'll answer it.
Because you're the host of the show.
Yes.
You're the host.
But what
the
would it matter whether
what talks would it about yourself more than you know, the issues?
What will you're ringing to talk about me and how I distance myself from
course.
The people of the Shankill? A load of complete baloney.
All right.
But anyway. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't pass.
Are you going to answer the question?
Yes, I will. No, I didn't pass my 11 plus. So
okay.
It was predicted that I would pass the 11 plus. And in my day, there was an A grade, which was a pass. There was a fail grade, whatever that was. And there was a middle grade. An M grade was a middle grade.
Yeah, the social selection grade. That's what it used to be known as.
And I got the middle grade.
And you got the social selection.
And people were very disappointed in me, and I was disappointed in myself that I wobbled on the day. Quite a traumatic. It's quite a traumatic experience when you're built up. You're passing all of the. They give you all of these practice tests, don't they?
Yes.
And like I was getting 99% in them. I was doing really, really well as a kid, and then on the day, I fell apart and I didn't pass it.
And it happens. That's why we have AQE tests these days, where you get three goes at it, Stephen.
But the reason I'm asking you, why does that matter? Why does it matter if I pass the 11 plus or not? What's the underlying point you're trying to make?
Well, fundamentally, you see, in this place, because that's where we were talking about, Northern Ireland, we don't have any independent or private schools apart from Rockport. So we have people here. We were talking about social class before the news and why people get sniffy and so on.
Yeah.
We have an entirely publicly funded education system, which is world class. It's great. You benefited from your education at Inst, okay?
Inst was a life-changing experience for me.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it was, yeah.
And similarly, I had an experience not too dissimilar from yours at Belfast Royal Academy. But I would be concerned, because you constantly talk about your concern for children from the Shankill and so on, disadvantaged children, that they too would be able to avail of that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Okay. No, so we have something in common, Stephen, whether you recognise it or not.
No, we do.
Right. And I think that the issue of providing hope through education to children of all backgrounds.
Big time.
It's something that we should do a little more about than pretending that somehow or other from the political class that you can join two tests together, one that is not dissimilar from your experience when you didn't pass the 11 plus, to the other, which was set up in order to give people the best opportunity to do their best, whether they were nervous, ill, or anything else. So let's leave it at that. That, you know, the issue here is that there are a lot of people who pretend that they have class when they don't have class at all.
Yeah. I think there is a one of the things that saddens me most is that when you see kids who are on the back foot from such an early age because they don't have opportunity. And I think we all find that really sad that you've got a kid and they've got, you know, they've got something about them, and yet, you know, it's going to be their postcode which decides some of their destiny.
Can I share a piece of good news with you, Stephen, then?
Yeah.
Through the vehicle of your program, and I've been a constant listener since you started, okay? The piece of good news is that the top scoring candidate in the 11 plus last year through the AQE test came from a disadvantaged background.
Really?
Yes, really, Stephen. Now, what I find...
Isn't that fantastic?
It's fantastic, but what I find objectionable is that the people behind AQE have kept that a secret.
No. They haven't kept it. Look, we need to be careful, don't we? And they haven't kept it a secret. There might be reasons why that hasn't been published. We will go to them and ask them and try to stand that.
There's a good news story, which will give encouragement to many working class, bright, hard-working children in terms of getting that first foot on the rung of a ladder of success.
Stephen, thank you. Nice to talk to you, as always. Brian Lampegg. Morning, Brian.
Hi, Stephen. Have you ever thought where you would be today if you hadn't had that lucky break getting into Inst?
I have. I would go as far to say, Brian, and who knows, right? Because we're hypothesizing. I would go as far to say that I'd be a different person. Because that school completely changed the wiring of my brain as to how I looked upon myself and the opportunities that I thought I think I have in life. Does that make sense?
Exactly. It does, but that exactly proves the point that maybe has been made today, that children who get that chance to go to grammar schools will get that different input into their lives. Rather than going to some schools, and in the past in Northern Ireland, some schools have simply been a daycare centre as opposed to an institute of education. And I think it's really sad that this idea of what school you go to is as important in our society.
I think we also need to be careful, Brian, don't we, that, you know, that we don't, just by mistake, because I don't think you mean this, but I think we need to be careful that we're not labelling, you know, grammar schools are fantastic and secondary schools are somehow... you know, a less good education, because they're not. There's some incredible grammar schools.
No, I'm not saying that at all, Stephen.
Sorry, secondary schools, I meant to say.
But what I'm saying is, unfortunately, that's the way our society operates. And if I may give you just one prime example, I went as a mature student to a university.
Yep.
And we had a guest lecturer coming in who was a leading barrister in Northern Ireland. He sat down in the row in front of me and talked to a young fella who he worked with his father. And the young fella says to him, "What's the best advice you can give me in relation to interviews?" And he says, "I'll tell you this now, make sure you wear your school tie." And the young lad beside him said, "What difference does that make?" And the barrister replied, "Rest assured that the people holding an interview are well aware of what school you went to when you're wearing your school tie."
And what do you make of that?
What I make of that is that it's a disgusting attitude to have. Everybody should be deemed on their merits and their abilities, not on what who their family is and what school they went to.
How do we put it right, Brian?
Well, you tell me, Stephen. Everybody in today's society wants to put their children to get the best education they can, because they know that when they're well-equipped with a decent education, they can achieve what they want to do. And you, for example, you're a prime example of that. If you had not went to Inst, they would have not had such an impact in your life, and you don't know where you could have been. You could have been working, you could have been the Vinny of the show.
Well, no, let's hold on a minute now.
No, that's a joke.
I know it's a joke.
But you know what I mean, Stephen? You know, those schools have discipline. They educate the children to have respect for themselves. And I went to a secondary school, and to be honest with you, you know, it was a struggle going through secondary school because of the vast range of abilities that they have to cater for. And because the education authorities don't put sufficient funding into the secondary schools, then a lot of people are left by the wayside when they shouldn't be, where they are quite capable of achieving so much more.
I think it's about, Brian, my experience of what school did for me, okay? And actually, my primary school also did this for me, a fantastic primary school at the top of the Ballygamartin Road called Spring Hill Primary. Even in those early years for me, the school was allowing, you know, they were allowing me to run as fast as I wanted to run. you know, school plays and all of that. They were putting time in behind the scenes to allow you to express yourself. That was Spring Hill Primary. And then in Inst, you see, look, I'm sure the education in Inst was great, right? But more importantly for me was this ethos where they said to me as a young boy, aged 11, be confident that you can achieve. Be confident that if you've got a dream that you can achieve it. And that sounds so pathetically, slushily poetic, Brian, right? And, you know, it sounds like a cliche. But I took what that school was saying to me. So I always wanted to work for the BBC. And that school kind of grabbed me and said, well, believe in yourself and do it and don't let anybody put you down. And you are as good as anybody else. And are all schools doing that, Brian? I don't know. But are all schools doing that?
Well,
ethos in most schools or not?
Well, do you honestly think that's what schools, especially the secondary schools or high schools in Northern Ireland, are thinking about in today's era, where they have to think about how much money they have to spend, how are they going to deal with a class of 36, how are they going to deal with any special needs that are in those classes whenever they're being squeezed? Their priority no longer is this relaxed ethos of you be the best you can be to let's get you through this and let's get you whatever qualification the government says we have to get you to get to the next level of education. A lot of that nurturing is out the window now, Stephen, because of the stress and strains that the teaching profession and the management of schools are now under. And grammar schools seem to be the only ones that could give that extra bit of oomph to their pupils because of the way they structure themselves and because they insist on getting a minimum amount of additional funding, and then they have funding teams within their schools trying to raise money to give the pupils of their schools the best education that they can give. And the schools in likes of the secondary schools don't have those facilities available, and the children are being penalised because of the financial environment we now live in.
Brian, thank you. I think this is really interesting territory, actually. Nicola in Ballysillan. Morning, Nicola.
Hiya, Stephen.
Morning.
Hiya. I'm just phoning. My children went through just normal mainstream school. My son is attending the Belfast Boys Model School, just completed 10 GCSEs out of 11, now going on to do A-levels. My daughter is in first year in the Girls Model, but my older daughter went to the girls' model school and had to work her backside off in school to work, you know, to get to where she is today. From a very young age, done acting. She done a film with Gillian Anderson, Sir Ben Kingsley, done stuff for BBC, done stuff for MTV. She was trainee assistant director on Game of Thrones, and she's only back from America there after teaching children acting for 3 months. She was over in America doing it, and she's now back doing a master's degree.
Fantastic.
So she's had to work really hard, but she has came across people that when she mentions what school she goes to, the sort of, it's a bit of snobbery towards her, but once she mentions them, what the work that she's done after, it's their attitude changes towards her. And she's a very humble, very down to earth. We always sort of do that with our children, you know, we sort of keep them grounded. You have to please, thank you, be polite to people, know your hours and graces, and remember where you came from.
Absolutely. And that's where, you know, we haven't mentioned it yet, Nicola, but parenting and what parents tell a child. And
they do need encouragement.
We know how important that is, don't we?
Yeah, you do. And the schools, and I cannot, you know, my son is on the autistic spectrum, and the boys' model has been fantastic with him. For him to get through the GCSEs and to get the results that he even got to go on to do A-levels now. And now he's looking to the future as to do an apprenticeship or to go on to university. And that's what his main goal. And the schools have just been so good in encouraging them. I know other parents that have sent their schools, say, to INS or BRA, and their kids have just been slogged out with doing work. were my children were doing the exact same exams, not having the amount of pressure that they did, but done really well, you know, and you could see the stress and strains that it was having on the other children that did go to the sort of the private schools, you know, that sort of the stress it was putting on. But it was, I think, sometimes I think with people, it's just whether you put your child into a school because of the name, the brand, and it's to make yourself look very snobberish. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what school you go to. It's what you do after and what the hard work is that you put in and what encouragement that you do get from that school.
See, I think it's,
and from the parents.
I would just also ask us to think about beyond the work, right, and the exams and the grades. It's also about the type of person they encourage you to become.
Yeah.
I guess a mindset, you know, in life towards other people.
Yeah.
I think that's important. And I'm just sitting here. I wonder how important primary school is, because we always tend to look at secondary school, don't we, as in big school.
I think primary school is, it is, it's the start of it.
Yeah.
You know, all my kids went through the same primary school, and the school was fantastic. They were very encouraging to the kids.
I can remember, I'm going back now, I'm 45 now, so I'm going back now.
You're a year older than me.
36. I'm going back 36 years, right?
Yes.
And I can't remember yesterday.
Okay, I can remember nursery.
Right? But I can't remember yesterday. But for all of the fantastic teachers that were in Spring Hill Primary School, my primary school, the headmaster, Mr. Lamont, the teachers, yes. Mrs. Hutchison, and so it goes on, Mr. Andrews. Here's what I can remember. I can remember them spending time behind the scenes with me because I wanted to be on stage and I wanted to act. And I cannot remember yesterday, but I can remember this. My name is Jem. I'm from next door. My job's to bake the cakes galore.
Yeah.
But although the bit inside's so tasty, I'm just here to bake the pastry. Yeah. Now, there's a 9-year-old kid who they spent time with to get me up there on stage and get me to remember that. And to this day, I'm grateful to them. Nicola, thank you. Nice chat today.